Okay, everybody, this will be the final session before we start the silence. And so when we get near the, whenever we run out of energy here, we'll just stop. And as I said, if your question didn't get answered, just write it out and give it to me with your address and I'll type up an answer. And so we're just going to pick up and let's see, you started last time, so I'll start this time.
Seems fair.
Fair enough. I have seen stats from GSO on the current demographics of AA. An interesting fact is there is a sharp decline in membership participation between the 5 and 10 year mark. As that is where I'm headed, please share your experiences in that part of your journey. The numbers less than 1 year, 31, 1 to 5, 24, 6 to 10, I don't know what those really mean. I've never seen any numbers like this in my own experience. So I don't know what I can really say except to say my experience between 5 and 10 years was that AA got more exciting and more exciting and more exciting. And it became less likely that I would ever leave. That's what it felt like to me. But I do know people who got older and they retired and they stayed sober by just going to church and went on about their lives. And on the one hand, you can't call it a failure. But from my point of view, it's hard to find new alcoholics in churches to help. And so we lose out on that part of it, being able to carry on the message. But I'm so sorry, but I don't know these numbers well enough to really make a good comment. So maybe somebody after the meeting can shed some light, okay? Sorry.
You have said, and I agree, that we are not in control and that our life will happen whether we control it or not. But don't we have some responsibilities? For example, don't I need to go to a certain number of meetings to not drink? Don't I have to do my work at work? Don't I try to act my way into right thinking with regards to my character defects? Isn't this, as Bill said, the proper use of the will? Have I no responsibility for the outcome in all of this? Where is the line? My understanding, and you know, here again, it's just my understanding based upon my experience that I have to be an active participant in my own recovery. Recovery from alcoholism is not a spectator sport. However, because I am powerless and lack of power is my dilemma, I have to be taught how to have a contact with a power greater than myself, which will solve my problems. I won't solve the problems. The power will solve the problems. And I got to be plugged in to the power. I've come to appreciate Alcoholics Anonymous as kind of like, you know, we talk about a kit of spiritual tools. The kit of spiritual tools that I've been given here are power tools. And they have to be plugged in. And so, you know, I have a responsibility. I've got a lot of responsibilities. That's one of the biggest problems with being a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's too damn much responsibility associated with it. I'd much rather be irresponsible myself. But in recovery, I am not responsible for the outcome of anything. I'm just responsible for suiting up and showing up and doing the deal. We hear all the time, plan the plan, don't plan the results. You know, my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. The higher my expectations, the lower my serenity. So I have to keep my magical magnifying mind off that stuff. Because there's something wrong with the way I think. I am wired up differently. I don't have to take responsibility for the outcome of anything, but I do have to take responsibility for taking the appropriate action. And God accepts responsibility for the outcome. I think most of the people here, if not all of the people here, have experienced at some time in their life the strength of the program. And we say something like, if I wasn't a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I didn't have this problem, I would not have been able to survive that, whatever that was. And that's a real clear indication to me of just how powerless I am and how powerful my God is.
Thanks, Jack.
Oops.
Okay. I love these. What is serenity? How about, I hate to steal an answer, you'll know it when you have it. If we asked in the room, we'd get at least five different definitions. You know, absence of conflict, etc. I would say it increases the closer you get to God. That it's not a one definition, that it just keeps increasing. And I suppose once you've let go of everything, that would be the only thing you would experience, is just love and serenity. Very difficult to answer, but a good question. Thanks.
How do I trust the thought of following my path? My plan got me here, but after many years, I am getting a new vision. Can I trust that? Well, there's another question on here also, which is, when you pray, what do you pray for or about? There's another question on here. Do you believe in being expectant? I don't know about the author of this question, but my plan did not get me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I doubt very seriously if there's anybody here who got up on a Saturday morning and said, you know, my life is going good. I mean, the wife and I are getting along great. The kids respect me. I'm doing good at work. I think I'll join AA. That's not part of my experience. I mean, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because it was the last house on the block, so I didn't have a plan to come here, and I didn't have a path. And I'm seeking God's will for me, and I think each of us is instructed to try to seek God's will for me. And I don't know what that is on a day-to-day basis. I just know I didn't die last night. And so I was given the gift of life again today, and that's why we call it the present. It says in the big book that, I'm to pray for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry it out. I think it also says that I really shouldn't pray for things for myself unless they would be helpful for other people. And I used to say at my home group that I was praying for a Cadillac so I could take people to meetings. And a guy remembered that and said that I used to pray for a Cadillac and to take people to meetings, and now I got a really nice Cadillac. So it worked out for me. And we laugh about that, but in point of fact, as long as I pray for things that would be of help to others, I can have a benefit also. And, you know, what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous is that, as I mentioned before, you know, my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. So I try to just suit up and show up and be comforted by the knowledge that there is a God and He wants only the best for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Okay. What is your current perception of the disease of alcoholism? Is it a twofold disease with a spiritual solution, or is it a threefold disease, like we hear in meetings, physical, mental, and spiritual? Is there really anything spiritually broken in an alcoholic, or just a disconnect? Oh, boy. It's hard to separate alcoholics from human beings. You know, we just happen to be hooked on alcohol. So human beings have the same problem when they're disconnected from God as alcoholics do. We're no different. It's exactly the same. A non-alcoholic who's separated from God is restless, irritable, discontent. The difference is that we were driven down to where we're going to do something about it. Because people don't do anything about things when they're mildly restless, irritable, and discontent, and lonely, and suicidal. You got to get to the extreme level. And that's why alcoholics are luckier than non-alcoholics. Because we're going to come back to our higher power, and a lot of people aren't. It's a great blessing. So, if that's the case, it's hard to call alcoholism bad, if you see what I mean, because it ends up being a blessing. It broke us. And so many people in AA say, I'm glad I'm an alcoholic, because I never would have found my higher power unless I had been forced to. Now, dividing it up in twofold or threefold, I never thought about it. Not that it matters. Twofold for the disease, I've just never thought about it. Is there anything broken in an alcoholic, or just a disconnect? That's what I would say. It's a disconnect. There's only one problem, being separated from God. So I would go along with the disconnect, but I don't know how to answer twofold, threefold. We'll probably go down the room, threefold over here, twofold over there. Both sides are right. Okay.
All right, this has got a heading which is underscored, forgiveness and acceptance. You have talked about the importance of forgiveness, no matter how terrible the act. And you have mentioned that the sooner you are able to forgive the person, the more powerful it will be. Being an AA, I believe that forgiveness is very important. But just knowing that doesn't always make it happen. I have tried in some situations and have prayed, but still find myself holding on to the thoughts about the other person, replaying the wrongs which have been done to me. Is there some preparation which you have done before an act has taken place, which has prepared you for these events when they take place? And are there more things which I can do at the moment which will help with the transition to forgiveness and acceptance? When I was laying on the floor of my apartment and felt life draining out of me, and knowing that I was going to die on that floor and I was never going to see my wife or our three children again, And having done absolutely nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous except sit in a chair, the only tool I had to reach for was the Serenity Prayer. And I asked God to give me the serenity to accept this thing which I couldn't change, and the courage to change what I could, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I prayed that prayer, and I prayed that prayer, and I prayed that prayer, and I prayed that prayer. And the prayer was answered, and God came. Up until that moment, the Serenity Prayer was theory for me, and now it is part of my experience. And I have since had occasions to use the Serenity Prayer a lot of different places, including cardiac intensive care at the Johns Hopkins Hospital, and it works there. It just works. And I thought that getting blown up thing was pretty bad. And my sponsor, Bob, thought it was pretty good. And I thought Bob was crazy. But, you know, Bob explained to me that there is a great deal of comfort in knowing that I cannot be harmed, because man had done his very best to try to kill me, and my survival was by the grace of God. So it was really good to have a sponsor. After the investigation began, and the folks were going out knocking on doors and asking questions, Bob and Ken said I had to forgive the person who had tried to kill me. I said, well, we don't know who it is. He said, that's all right. You still got to forgive him anyway. And I said, I don't think so. And they said, well, you need to do that, because otherwise he will win and you will lose, and it will eat you from the inside out. And so we began, Bob and Ken, helping me to pray for this poor person who felt they could improve their life by killing me. I thought it was silly, and it set me free. And that's Sandy has talked about a woman that he saw on television 25 years ago, whose son had been shot and killed, and they, you know, the TV people ran up and stuck a microphone under her in her face and said, "How do you feel about the person who killed your son?" And she said something to the effect that she forgave him because he was so far separated from God. And that, I think on another occasion I've heard you mention the Amish families up in Lancaster when their children were all killed at the school, and that the families went to comfort the parents of the killer. Had I not seen that kind of thing take place, I wouldn't think it was possible. And of course, that's why we gather up together, so that we can learn from each other and see, I can get strength from watching what you do that is in keeping with the principles of this program. Acceptance is very, very important here. It doesn't mean approval. I don't approve of the guy who tried to kill me. I don't approve of his actions, but I accept them, and I forgive him. And in so doing, I get to have a life, and he doesn't live rent-free in my head. Thank you.
Good job, Jack. Wonderful. Okay. What is a good gauge or measure of when we should check our perception of God's will in our lives with someone else? Always. That's, I've learned, huh?
Oh, it flipped over.
Let me read the question again.
Thanks, Joe.
What is a good gauge or measure of when we should check our perception of God's will in our lives with someone else? And I said, always. In other words, I've learned to, on a regular basis, run by friends. I don't need just one, just friends. This happened, I see it this way. Does that make sense that I see it this way? And then I always get a clearer picture, maybe close to what I saw. And so I would encourage you to have a little circle of people that you run things by on a constant basis. Just, you'd be amazed how humble it keeps you, because you never are trying to be self-sufficient. That's the most dangerous thing we can do, is to become self-sufficient. Thanks.
I imagine that I've just about laid to rest one of my character defects when, quote, up jumps the devil, unquote, and it returns full force. I'm glad he's not talking about lust. Is this normal? Is there a quick answer to this problem? Is the problem in the assessment of my efforts? Are my expectations too high of my results? I've come to understand and appreciate that the sixth step is an ongoing, lifelong process of life. And in that inventory process of the fourth step, I found that I was dishonest, and I'd like to be an honest person. I found that I was unfaithful, and I'd like to be a faithful person. I found that I was a liar, and I'd like to be a truthful person. I found that I was, I don't know if I said fearful or not, but I'd like to be less fearful. But those are things that are part of the human condition, I've come to understand. I just don't have rage like I used to have. I don't have paralyzing fear like I used to have. I don't steal like I used to, and I'm faithful to my wife, where I was used to not be so. I'd like to think that I've become the person of integrity that God created me to be, but there is work to be done. And what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I self-identify one of these character defects, that my self-identification is going to distract me from God's purpose for me. I mean, while I'm working on anger, God may very well want me to be working on fear. So during my daily walk, different things present themselves at different times. I don't have the power to conquer any of these character defects. I do, however, have a set of instructions that tell me that when these things appear, I get God into the game at once. I ask God to take this thing from me. And I call Ken, my sponsor, or I call an understanding person, as has already been referred to, whose recovery I respect. And if I haven't harmed anybody, then I don't have to make that amends, but I do have to resolutely turn my attention to doing something for somebody else. And I don't have to quantify, qualify, submit for grading the results. I just have to take the action, and God takes care of the rest. So I don't need to overthink this. I just need to be into action.
Wonderful, Jack. Okay, we're down to the last two. We're going to finish. Is it spiritually consistent to believe that in order to be of maximum service to God and one's fellow man, one should eat well and look and feel good? And I know that sounds like a surfacey question, but I think there's some validity to that. That showing respect to ourselves by taking care of this package that's been given to us. We lost a lot of people in the early days of AA, probably as many to smoking as we did to alcohol, when all the meetings were smoking meetings. And you could say, well, smoking doesn't have anything to do with being spiritual. Yes, it does. It really does, because it lowers your opinion of yourself. And the purpose of spirituality is to see what a magnificent person you are. And so I don't see anything wrong with treating oneself well, physical fitness, whatever it is, as part of spirituality. We don't officially do that in AA. It's not one of the steps, but you asked my opinion. And I know that I just function better as a sponsor when I feel good, when I just have a good feeling about myself. I just function better. Last one, my dear friend.
Well, how do you stay spiritually grounded in the hard times? It's easy when everything is going well. My definition of a good day is when everything goes my way. I think they wrote a song. Zippity-doo-dah. My, oh my, what a wonderful day. I really don't need this program when everything's going my way. But I'm very familiar with 911 prayers. I lifted up plenty of them before I got here. When I'm out of ideas, I'll turn to the God idea by nature. In Hagerstown, we have a Class A baseball team. That's about as Bush League as you can get. And we have Bush League pinch hitters in Hagerstown. And I would no more call upon one of them to get me out of a scrape. When I'm in a scrape, I want Jeter. That's who I want. I used to want Sammy Sosa, but not anymore. But the point is, I want the real deal. And what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous is kind of like I got to use the program full strength. It's a 12-step program. It's not a cafeteria. It's not take what I want and leave the rest behind. In point of fact, it's take the stuff I don't want and apply it to my life, because Alcoholics Anonymous encourages me and urges me to do stuff I don't want to do so I can get stuff I've never had. My definition of a bad day is when you don't do what I want you to do. And then it just gets worse from there. So what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous has already been referenced is lack of power is my dilemma. Of myself, I am nothing. If I suit up and show up and take these suggested steps, and I think that there's a bait and switch thing that goes on in the big book, because when we get down to, I think it's step 11, it says, if you have carefully followed directions, doesn't say anything about suggestions, they've switched it up to directions, but if I follow directions, I get what they promised me. I get a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I get to help other alcoholics, something that was denied to Mother Teresa. It's been denied to almost to every clergy person I know, except for the alcoholic clergy people. It's been denied certainly to those who have prescription pads, the physicians and the caregivers. They do not have the gift that you and I have been given. And so when I turn my attention to what I can do to help other people, my day changes. I'm disappointed things didn't work out the way I wanted them to. But I've got a good life today. I'm sober today. On April the 7th, 1982, I was a hopeless, helpless alcoholic, and I didn't think so. I haven't had a drink since then. That's pretty sudden. Now, I didn't recognize it as being sudden. I didn't plan on it being my last drink. It wasn't part of my plan. But it's pretty miraculous. And here we are on a Saturday afternoon in Florida, all sitting upright, fully clothed, and in our right minds, and I don't think anybody's had projectile vomiting all day. And that's nothing short of a major miracle. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's give Jack a round of applause for I'm going to set up the silence. That was just delightful.
He's used me, and now he has cast me off. Bye.
Okay.
What we're going to do now, we're going to start 3+ hours of silence. And a lot of you may have not done this before and approach it with some trepidation, but I just wish you could see how wonderful you're going to feel 3 hours from now. Keep close tabs of the different experiences you have when you're staying silent. And you're mixed. We're now going to mix with each other. We're going to end up sitting near each other at dinner. We're going to do this. Make eye contact. Smile when you come by somebody on the way in. Pat them on the shoulder. Just keep, you will find out that you can continue to experience this spiritual growth in the silence. And so it isn't a question of surviving it, it's a question of observing it. This is the only way you can observe what it's like to be with a group of people and we're all going to stay silent. And then when you finish, you'll be able to discuss what it's like. So it's not like, well, I made it and that's all. So keep track in your mind. Watch. Well, I was nervous and then I felt this way and now I feel comfortable. Wow, this is it. Whatever it is, keep track of it and see what it's like. I think when it ends, you're going to be delighted that you participated. I've never had anybody say, well, I wish we didn't have that on the program. Right now you may think that way. But I guarantee you, you're going to be amazed. And so, John, just go ahead and turn that off.